Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Wednesday, November 10th. So now that the House has passed that physical infrastructure bill from President Biden, it remains even more uncertain whether the big human infrastructure initiative will have the votes to pass in either house of Congress. Remember, progressives in the House had wanted to wait to approve physical infrastructure, which had bipartisan support, until they had guarantees that the human infrastructure one would pass too. They did not get that before Friday night's physical infrastructure vote. So the campaign for the other bill goes on. But here's one obstacle to getting it passed that we've mentioned before on this show, but we'll focus a little more closely on right now. President Biden and other Democrats may not be communicating clearly enough what it is. It doesn't even have a consistent name that they call it by. The bill includes universal pre-K, child care subsidies, paid family leave, expanded home health aid access for seniors and disabled people. It originally had free community college that got negotiated out. It also has climate provisions. So it's a lot to give a name to, but even the president calls his own bill different things on different days. Just taking three examples from this summer, here he is on July 7th calling it the Build Back Better Plan.
There's a lot more the agreement's going to do to encourage the physical and sure physical infrastructure. Lays the foundation for a strong and durable and sustainable competitive economy. But what I want to talk about today is human infrastructure. It's essential to that foundation as well.
All right. Actually, in that one, he didn't call it Build Back Better. He called it human infrastructure. See, I'm confused by the president and the clips of him that we pulled. In this one, he does call it, not human infrastructure, Build Back Better.
We have to get to work on the next critical piece of my agenda, my Build Back Better plan, making housing more affordable. It's so unaffordable to so many Americans, providing clean energy tax cuts, including homeowners to make energy efficient improvements in their homes.
And he also refers to it by another name that we've heard a lot, a reconciliation bill.
In addition to the bipartisan infrastructure agreement that I believe we're going to get done, I'm here to make a case for the second critical part of my domestic agenda. It's a combination of parts of my American Jobs Plan that were essential and not included in the bipartisan infrastructure plan, as well as my American Families Plan. In Washington, they call it a reconciliation bill.
He actually had two more names for it in that clip, Reconciliation Bill and his American Families Plan. That's another name. He hasn't been using that one lately. Same president, same bill, four names, none of them all that clear. Now, we also often hear it referred to as a social spending bill. You've probably been hearing that one a lot lately. A safety net bill, a safety net plus climate bill, even by its original price tag, the $3.5 trillion bill. Here, Meet the Press host Chuck Todd does that with Senator Joe Manchin.
You could support this $3.5 trillion
no,
plan.
No, I cannot support $3.5 trillion.
Okay, so that is a... Okay. All right, now we're getting to Brad. It is not a time issue. It really is a cost issue.
All right, and that, even though the cost over 10 years, not 1 year, is the number that he said, that's what it was originally, and it might not increase the deficit by even a dollar because of how it would be paid for. Now it's been cut in half anyway to $1.75 trillion over 10 years. But the point is, the Democrats seem to have a messaging problem around what could be the most important piece of social legislation since Social Security. So let's talk about messaging that bill and Democratic and Republican messaging generally, after the significant Republican victories and Democratic losses in the elections last week and going into the crucial 2022 midterms. With us for this is communications researcher and progressive candidate's campaign advisor, Anat Shenker Osorio, founder of the consulting firm with her initials ASO Communications and host of the podcast Words to Win By, just beginning its second season. Anat, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's start with this Build Back Better, Human Infrastructure, Reconciliation, American Families Plan, Social Spending Bill. Are you as surprised as I am that it doesn't have a single or a clear name after all this time?
No, I've been alive for more days than one, so I'm not surprised. I'm also not surprised that in this discussion, Democrats are committing the cardinal sin of trying to sell the recipe instead of selling the brownie. I often tell my clients, do not take your policy out in public. It is unseemly. The name of your policy should never be your message. Your message should be what the policy will deliver in people's lives, because we see over and over again that even when we do a super simple wording experiment, say how many people support, let's call it paid family leave, most Americans do. When instead we say you're there the first time your newborn smiles, approval goes up, up, up. Same thing with raising wages or raising the minimum wage. When we reframe it as everyone is paid enough to care for their families, support goes up. We need to talk about what these policies deliver in the tangible lived experience of our audiences, not the names of the policies within them.
You know, I've joked or half joked on the air that they should call it the give your kid free pre-K and keep grandma out of a nursing home bill. Do you think something along those lines would start a different, maybe more accurate national conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're doing in that phrase, although I'm guessing the URL might be a little bit clunky, Brian, just guessing, is that you are indeed following that first rule that I set out, where you are discussing it in terms of how it would feel in your life. I think just, you know, to be clear, the laying out of the challenge of the name, which is different to sort of how do you describe it? How do you talk about it? What is the mm-hmm. second, third, fourth sentence? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is that as you've already implied, and it's just absolutely true, repetition is absolutely essential. So even if there wasn't a perfect overarching name, and by the way, I've got a couple in my pocket, but I'm withholding them because I want to hear from other people. I find that fascinating.
Uh-huh. Will you do a reveal at the end of the segment?
I will do a reveal. But even with that reveal, what we find in message testing and experimentation is that there is a specific reason why repetition is so important. Repetition is in and of itself persuasive. Messages that are more familiar to people are rated to be more desirable, more credible. People like them better. Because what repetition does is it creates what we call cognitive ease. It is that experience of when somebody goes da 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 and your brain does the da da. You are not having to work for it. You are simply filling in the rest of the name. And so this is why, for example, corporations that have, you know, let's take Nike, had Just Do It as their slogan since the time they were founded are never going to change that, because they've created a mental imprint. So the exercise of renaming the thing in a way is sort of a problem. I think we just need to call it Build Back Better, even if that's not my favorite name, only mm-hmm. because there is some level of existing familiarity and we need mm-hmm. that repetition effect.
And they do seem to be landing on Build Back Better recently. Is that your impression?
It is my impression. It's also, it's a carrying through of what the campaign slogan was. That is what they eventually landed and cemented on. And so this is meant to be, you know, part of the argument that Biden and Democrats are making is that he was elected. This essentially is his mandate. And if you want to be able to make that argument that this is what turned people out in record numbers, as we saw in 2020, then having some sort of hearkening back to what was said during the campaign is useful.
Let's see what our listeners are coming up with. Here's Max in Borum Hill. Max, you're on WNYC. You got a name for that bill?
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me on. Been thinking about this for weeks, and I came up with the Rising Tide Bill. Would have been a great name. I know changing it now would be not helpful, but I thought the Rising Tide Bill, because it lifts all boats, and that might address some of the concerns about the tax hikes on the rich, because they still would benefit from the economic lift mm-hmm. that the whole thing would get.
All right. Interesting. The rising tide bill, although that makes me think of, let's do nothing about climate change, and then we'll have rising sea levels, and all the tides will be. Scout in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Scout. You got one?
I have a few that are kind of similar. Just thinking about like alternatives, like social infrastructure or wellness infrastructure, or really any kind of variation that's people-centered, because I think that that's really the theme that's missing. I just have to say that perspective of kind of offering the ingredients rather than the dish being a bad strategy is fascinating.
Social infrastructure or wellness infrastructure? We're having fun with the callers, you know, and a little naming game here. But is there a legitimate question in this case of whether any good messaging could get past Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema if they just have political or campaign funding interests in blocking the thing that are too strong, you know, for the other side to overcome with any kind of rhetoric or messaging or communications? How much can messaging do in a case like this?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I'm going to take the question a step back, if you'll allow, mm-hmm. which is that I would absolutely love to live in a world. It is my fantasy. These are small fantasies. It's going to reveal a lot about me. It is my fantasy to live in a world where what people think about Democrats is made out of what Democrats say or even what they do. But I live in America. And in America, the former senator from MasterCard and people who are in tight with Wall Street get called socialists, and that label sticks. I could go on and on. What we see in our public opinion research is that people's formulation of what Democrats stand for, what they believe in, et cetera, are largely shaped not by actual Democratic utterances, but rather by the media, and of course, by what Republican opponents say about them. So why do I bring this up in answer to your question? The theory of change question that you're essentially asking is, what would it actually take to exert enough pressure on Manchin and Sinema, or dare we even hope bigger, you know, somebody like Lisa Murkowski or somebody like Mitt Romney or somebody who at least genuflects at the altar of being some sort of reasonable human being, despite, you know, what their party credentials might be? What would it take? And so the question is, where have we seen in the past where people have kind of either broken party lines or have, you know, changed their minds in a visible way? And to me, really what is essential is that right now, a lot of the media reporting on these negotiations, on the sausage making, you know, just as you played in that Biden clip, the idea of calling it a reconciliation bill, can we think of anything more boring than taking, you know, the only thing more boring than taking your policy out in public as your message is taking your process out in public. That is just death. No one needs to be talking about that. That definitely is not inspiring in terms of a message. So the question is really, what would it take? And could there be enough unrelenting public pressure, which honestly, we haven't seen that much of, right? And part of that is COVID. But if you look at what was happening, let's say, around the ACA fight when the Trump administration wanted to repeal it, and people were physically putting their bodies in the chambers, right? And we were seeing mobilization and activation, what would that take? And I think at least one element of that is that this media story around conflict, the media likes to talk about conflict, it's understandable, it is engaging and sexy. Right now, they've cast this conflict as quote unquote Democrats infighting, the moderates, the progressives, you know, who's doing what, who won't vote on what, who's stopping what. And so as Democratic activists, grassroots strategists from the left, what we need to understand is that we're not going to eliminate that media hunger for a conflict story. And what we need to do is accurately recast it, because there is, in fact, a division. And that is a division between the very wealthiest few and the politicians they've paid for, and the rest of us, the rest of Americans of all walks of life, of every color, creed, and zip code, who massively support this bill, who want our children to get and stay well, who want our parents to be able to buy their prescription drugs, who want to be able to see a doctor and not get sick at the thought of a bill that will come later. And that is the division we need to be talking about in order to hold all of the politicians, not just Manchin and Sinema, because let's remember, it's not just them. It is all of the Republicans to hold their feet to the fire and to be asking them questions. Why are you blocking what your voters want? Why are you standing in the way of people being able to get and stay well? Why are you taking insulin out of people's hands? If we had media actually asking hard questions, not just of Manchin and Sinema, but of every single Republican, then I think we would be having a very different conversation.
John in Slate Hill, you're on WNYC. What's your name of the bill?
My name for the bill would be the American Affordability Act. Call on to the alliterative nature and try and get it into people's mouths and have something that sounds good and also talks about more what the bill is. It's making general life more affordable for the average person.
Thank you very much. I like that one, American Affordability Act. Gene in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. What would you call the bill?
Is that me?
It is you.
Oh, sorry. I didn't catch the name. I would call it the real Make America Great Again bill.
Thank you very much. A little contrast there with a certain person. Chuck in Hoboken, what would you call the bill?
Yeah, I'm quickly going to suck up and say if we called it the Brian Lehrer bill, everyone would love it. Okay. Now, no, that being said,
down.
Oh, come on now.
Go ahead.
Okay, here's what I got. The Lifting American Families Act. You're saying what you're doing in the name, and more importantly, you have an attack line built in. It's Kristen Sinema, we're trying to lift American families. You want to hold them down. We're trying to lift your finances. Joe Manchin wants to hold them down. We're trying to lift your quality of life.
I'm going to leave it there for time and pace, but we've got your name there, the Lifting American Families Act. Also interesting. And Chris in Maplewood has one. Hi, Chris. What would you call the bill?
What about the generational solidarity bill or the cross-generation bill?
Another interesting one, the generational solidarity bill. All right, you know what? We're going to stop there. And now you promised that before the end of the segment, you would reveal a name or some of the names that you've been fantasizing about if it was time to rename the bill.
Yes.
What you got?
If there were time, and so I want to be clear and go on record, I'm actually not recommending that for the repetition point. So I will tell you, but first, if okay, I will ask you, if you had to guess, when we ask Americans in poll after poll after poll, focus group after focus group after focus group, what one value do you associate most closely with the United States? What would you guess always rises to the top, regardless of demographic group? What one value? What do people say?
Optimism?
Good guess. It's freedom. Mm. The value that people across racial groups, across other demographics, age, most closely associate with the United States is freedom. And that is a value that the right has claimed and that the left has been too scared to utilize, and that is really to our peril. Freedom is the value that helped win us marriage equality. The shift from right to marry to freedom to marry was incredibly important in that campaign, as were other linguistic fixes. Freedom, core value in the civil rights movement, Freedom Summer, Freedom Riders. And so again, if it were way back in time and we were playing the name game a long time ago, I think the encapsulation of this bill is freedom to thrive.
Really interesting. That's, and really, there's a larger message there. And by the way, I say optimism as something that historically was associated with America as, you know, an immigrant country for those who immigrated here voluntarily, something come and make a better life. Optimism has been associated. Clearly, optimism is in pretty short supply these days. But you want to take back freedom from the right, basically, because they own it right now.
They utilize it more frequently, but even in more recent testing, for example, when we're looking at how to make a full-throated case for equitable, fully funded, race-forward public education, where we actually teach our children the truth, the good and bad of our history, which, by the way, Americans favor in huge numbers,
talking about the freedom to learn. Children deserve the freedom to learn the truth of our past so they can reckon with our mistakes, understand our present, and create a better future. That is a wildly popular message. It is not coincidental that freedom to vote is the name of the, you know, newer form of what was the For the People Act. That name was very deliberately chosen. So I would say that the left, it's not that we need to reclaim it, that the right has it entirely. Freedom has always been a contested value, freedom from, freedom to, as you're very familiar. It's just that the left has sort of under-articulated. It's been there in our arguments. We just need to bring it to the top. Again, that would also land us that value of repetition if we had freedom to vote, freedom to thrive, freedom to learn.
30 seconds left in the segment. Tell people what they would hear if they listened to your podcast.
They would hear amazing stories of progressive wins around the world and the words and strategies we use to deliver them.
A messaging expert given 30 seconds to promote her podcast does it in 10, proving the worth of Anat Shankar Osorio, founder of the consulting firm ASO Communications and host of the podcast Words to Win By. This has been really interesting. Hope to have you back.
Thank you so much. And thank you for including your listeners' voices. They're obviously brilliant.
Brian Lehrer, a daily politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.